On November 13th, Felix Unger was asked to remove himself from his place of residence. That request came from his wife. Deep down, he knew she was right. He also knew that someday he would return to her. With nowhere else to go, he appeared at the home of his childhood friend, Oscar Madison. Welcome to TwerpCast number 11, OscarCast 2008. Today, this very odd couple will discuss ad nauseum the award presented by the Academy, Oscar. I'd like to introduce you to Jim Caswell, childhood friend, executive producer, and most likely to win the Oscar for Best Face on Radio.
And I've been bribed into introducing Doug Zeitlin, executive producer of the 2008 Twerpies. I said Twerpies, not the gastric reflex or the STD. As Doug mentioned, we will be discussing the 80th Annual Academy Awards on today's show. Now, to preface this, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Doug and I have known each other for 30-plus years, and we've discovered that we have a lot of things in common. We agree on a lot of things. We have similar tastes in movies, similar tastes in TV shows, similar tastes in women. I mean, anyway, when we agree, we really agree. But when we disagree, we really disagree.
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Loved it.
Hated it.
The Unforgiven.
Loved it.
Hated it. Flash Gordon.
Hate it.
Hate it. See?
If you've listened to previous Twerpcasts, I don't wish to bore you. Flash Gordon sucks.
Okay, cool. We've gotten our obligatory Flash Gordon bashing out of the way early. Woo!
It's pretty bad when the Sam Jones version looks really good.
Now, award ceremonies, and specifically the Oscars, are one of those situations where we really disagree. So come, join us as we get into our annual, "The Oscars are great!
The Oscars suck!"
discussion. Now, for those of you who have been living in a hole for the past 80 years, let me tell you a little bit about what the Oscars are. The Academy Awards was originally created to, and I quote, "recognize excellence of professionals in the film industry, including directors, actors, and writers." The first ceremony was held on Thursday, May 18th, 1929, and they've had a ceremony every year with the exception of 1933. The voting membership as of 2007 were 5,829 members, with over a third of those being actors and actresses. Now, the reason I told you that little bit of history is because one of the main reasons why I like the Oscars is because of the history of it. No other awards ceremony has the extensive history as the Oscars. It is considered the biggest ceremony in the industry. It's the longest running with many historical moments. There have been people who have turned down awards for political reasons. Many times it becomes the soapbox for people within the industry because they know so many people have tuned in to see these awards. For the film industry, this is the Super Bowl.
I don't disagree with any of that. Problem is, it's a big love fest. It's a bunch of people who are a third actors and actresses giving themselves all pats on the backs for what a good job they did.
And strangely enough, I can't argue with that. One of the key differences, though, is that you allow that to keep you from enjoying the ceremony, whereas I enjoy the ceremony in spite of it.
No, that's a very good point. I think that the ceremony is all pomp and circumstance. I am very happy to read the winners of the Oscar in the newspaper the next day. The actual ceremony itself, it has no appeal to me.
I first fell in love with watching the Oscars back during what I consider to be the golden days of Billy Crystal hosting. The Oscars at that point were more than just an awards show. It was an entire presentation. Billy Crystal did a wonderful job of not just presenting and hosting, but making it a true entertainment event. Since Billy Crystal has stopped hosting, I don't find it as entertaining. That doesn't stop me from watching it each year, though. There have been good hosts, there have been bad hosts, but I always manage to find some form of enjoyment out of watching the presentation.
What is it about the Oscars itself? What is it that you're finding enjoyable year after year?
There are two parts to that answer. Number one, as I said, I enjoy the show. I enjoy the presentation. most years. Nobody has really been able to capture the entertainment value as of yet that Billy Crystal had. But then again, I don't think there are as many people who are as big of fans of the ceremony and the industry as Billy Crystal is. I remember him always talking about sitting in front of the television and looking forward to the Oscars each year, always wanting to be a presenter. Whereas a lot of presenters since that time have come across more as, okay, this is another paying gig.
That's actually how I see it. For these people, this is a paying gig. This is their job to be there. They have to look good on camera. They have to promote themselves and their movies. That's really what it's all about. It's about free advertising. You get a little tiny movie made on a shoestring budget like Juno, gets a national release because it's nominated for an Oscar. Now, that's not to say Juno is not a good movie. But if Juno is a good movie in its own, that should be the reason for it to get national release, not because it's nominated for an Oscar.
If the big problem is publicity, though, there are far worse offenders than the Academy Awards. I remember seeing the MTV Movie Awards last year, and they had the whole red carpet thing, and from the beginning of the pre-show all the way through till the end of the ceremonies, it seemed like one giant advertisement for Transformers, which hadn't even come out yet. MTV even put together a special award, the best movie that hasn't been released yet, and Transformers won. It was one giant commercial.
It's an unfair analogy because the MTV Movie Awards historically is an anti-award show. It has nothing to do with really who's best. It is making fun of the Oscars and the popularity contest, because the only people who actually win MTV Movie Awards are the popular people. Honestly, they may as well say the year that they decide, okay, we're going to put Sarah Michelle Gellar, and then we're going to pick four other ugly Bettys to put her against, because it's automatically going to Sarah Michelle Gellar. Can I say that the MTV Movie Award isn't a giant advertisement? No way, it is, but it's meant to be ironically funny.
Well, obviously I watch the MTV Movie Awards. I can't very well sit here and say that it was one giant advertisement if I hadn't seen it. But like most things that are on MTV, I'm fully willing to accept the fact that I just didn't get it. I don't get a lot of the humor that's on the movie awards. I tend to fast forward through the music segments. I am that old fogey at times.
I watch it every year as well, and I gotta say that the quality has gone steadily downhill. It really reeks compared to the first few years when they were really pushing the edge and the boundaries. There was a time early on in the first several MTV Movie Awards where they were setting a new standard. As the years have gone on, it has become steadily mainstream. It's become the antithesis of the Oscars. The Oscars are a place where the stars can get on, and they know they're going to have a huge audience, and they can talk about their political agendas. The MTV Awards show has the exact same star appeal for completely different reasons, because it's a place where they can plug Transformers or War of the Worlds or whatever the big summer blockbuster is going to be.
Yeah, but at the same time, they do have their own political agendas as well. I think it's been for the past 5 years that the Best Kiss Award always goes to the same-sex relationships. It was one thing when it was Sarah Michelle Gellar and Selma Blair, because that was kind of cutting edge at the time.
No, that's cutting edge now. That should get the Best Kiss Ever Award.
Your snout's showing. But when you have Will Ferrell and I don't remember who the guy was, when that's winning Best Kiss just because it's a kiss between two guys, that's not cutting edge.
The total irony in this is the kiss itself wasn't the joke. It was the fact that the other actor, the French guy, comes to get a second kiss, and then Will Ferrell's like, no, you only get one. So people have kind of missed the fact that they have the award for the kiss, but the joke went right over their heads.
And the only reason that the kiss is winning isn't because it's funny, isn't because it was cutting edge. It was because it was between two guys. I mean, you want to talk about popularity contests. You want to talk about giving in to the crowd. That's a perfect example of it. They want to show how open-minded they are by always highlighting things of that nature.
The Best Kiss Award is not about the kiss. It's about the most shock from the kiss.
Right. And in that case, let's just call it what it is. It's best shock value. It's not like it's highlighting real acting, real passion, real interaction between two characters. The award is just highlighting the fact that two people of the same sex are making out. But the MTV Movie Awards doesn't take place again until May or June. We're talking about the Oscars now.
Much in the same way that the MTV Movie Awards is kind of fake, it's an advertisement, they're not real awards. The Oscars suffer from this even worse because they're just people patting themselves on the back. The awards very rarely go to the actors or actresses in movies that deserve them. They're being doled out as political favors. Pre-show today, I brought this up. I'm challenging anybody out there to rent three movies: Good Morning Vietnam, Dead Poets Society, and Good Will Hunting. Figure what's two of those three movies that Robin Williams deserved an Oscar for. I guarantee you will come to the same conclusion as most of the rest of the world: not Good Will Hunting.
I really wish that I could argue this fact. I can't. And this isn't even something that's new to the industry. Back in the 1970s, John Wayne won the Oscar for Best Actor for the movie Rooster Cogburn. A lot of people believed that was going to be his last film. He was in poor health at the time. The cancer was starting to set in, even though people didn't really know that it was cancer and didn't know what was wrong with John Wayne, but they knew that something was wrong with him. And so they gave him the Oscar for Best Actor. He had far better performances before that point. And he actually had a few movies after that point. What truly was his last film, which was a movie called The Shootist, was a far better performance than the one that he gave in Rooster Cogburn. But they gave it to him because they thought, this is it for John Wayne, and we want to honor him by giving him an Oscar. They do this type of thing all the time.
So really what you're saying is we don't disagree, we agree. It's a very political organization, and people are getting the Oscars not because the movie they're in earned them, but because the actor themselves just simply, this is their year.
Correct.
All right, well, I totally agree with that. By the John Wayne analogy, I think it's about time that Jackie Chan get one, because one of these movies is going to be his last. He's going to break something he can't go back and fix.
Like his neck?
Exactly.
Well, that gets into a whole other level of politico in Hollywood.
For years, people haven't been considered for Oscars. Movies haven't been considered for Oscars because they were genre films or what have you.
It gets even worse than just genre films. There have been movies that have been overlooked by the Academy because they were foreign language films. I mean, for an industry that considers itself to be so liberal and so open-minded, they really shut the door very quickly on minorities and the quote-unquote tough topics. Which is very odd, because the Academy in and of itself is very much a dichotomy. They will either be ultra-liberal or ultra-conservative. They rarely ever meet in the middle. A lot of times you can pick which actor or actress is going to win the award simply by looking at what type of character they played. A lot of times if an actress plays someone who is homely or a lesbian or abused, they'll get the award. Doesn't matter if their performance was good or not, it just depends on what type of character they picked to play.
I think that's more indicative of the type of roles women are offered. In a majority of Hollywood hype blockbuster movies, women can choose to portray themselves as a Stepford wife, or the perfect housewife, and the perfect mother, and the perfect everything, or they have a choice of playing somebody who is abused or somebody who is in a hard situation. So it's basically, they're not given that middle ground. They can either play a stereotype on one side or a stereotype on the other side. I think it really comes down to women in Hollywood still are not getting choice roles.
As I said before, there is the ultra one side or ultra the other, and there really isn't a whole lot of middle ground.
I would say that a better barometer for someone's ability to act, somebody's ability to write, or somebody's ability to direct, can be found at the Sundance Festival. It's a shame that this is solely an indie film festival. Filmmakers in the independent film industry really are looking at it more in terms of the art value. Actors are able to take roles with more depth. Writers are able to choose more topics in a wider variety of areas. Directors are able to take more chances, try something new, something innovative. I would say for my own self, the only drawback is they tend to be art house pictures then, and I'm not truly an art house fan. That's not to say that they're bad, but I really do want to see Pirates of the Caribbean. I mean, it may not be art, may not be a fancy 7-course meal, but sometimes I like my fast food.
in many ways, we're dealing with appealing to the lowest common denominator. People who make Sundance films aren't looking to create a blockbuster. They're creating in order to create. The blockbuster films, the ones that are being made specifically so that they can rake in hundreds of millions of dollars, the acting isn't always that good. It's just being put out there as cinematic candy.
Well, let's face it, if you have good CGI, you really don't need a story or an actor.
Thank you, Michael Bay.
I believe that's actually a direct quote from Michael Bay.
Yes, it is, actually.
A movie like Juno, this is your stereotypical Sundance movie, and it still has mass appeal. You don't have to have all of the glamour, all of the glitz, all of the CGI. That's not necessary to a good movie. Whether or not you like a movie like Cloverfield, which is, honestly, it's not rewards worthy, possibly in the effects department, that could be argued. But here's a movie made on a $25 million budget in the $200 million movie industry at this point, and it made its money back in one night. If you're a studio and what you want is to make a profit, you don't have to do the $200 million movie. You can make Juno. You can make Cloverfield if you want to.
Yes, but movies like Juno and Cloverfield are often a case of playing Russian roulette in the movie industry. They aren't guaranteed to bring in $100 million or $200 million.
They don't need to.
And that's what the studio is looking for, is the guaranteed multi-hundred million dollar films.
It's bad economics. Makes more sense to make a $25 million movie that can pull in $40 million in a weekend, making you a huge profit in one weekend, than to spend $200 million on a movie and hope to get $400 million back, because it often doesn't happen.
I agree that they probably should spend less money on making films. The fact that they're spending $260 million to make one 100-minute film is incredibly exorbitant. And yes, you're right. They should make movies for less money and not have to make back hundreds of millions of dollars before they can see a profit.
So let's look at summer blockbusters. I mean, this is the time that the movie industry wants to make their money. This is where every single week you've got a movie that's come out that's cost $100 million or that has CGI in it, or it has some sort of catch because it's going to get you into the movie theater. How many of the blockbusters this year are actually nominated for any sort of Oscar?
Most of those films, if they get nominated, and that's a big if, it's usually for a technical award, for the CGI, for the special effects. That being said, those movies aren't being made to draw the attention of the Academy Awards. Those movies are being made to draw in the dollar amount. It's the movies that are released in November and December and maybe make $50 million. Those are the ones that draw the attention of the Academy. Like I said, there's a bit of elitism going on as well. It was very strange last year to see Pirates of the Caribbean on the Best Picture roll for the Academy Awards. That was an oddity.
The irony is, if this is really an award where people are going to pat themselves on the back for the good jobs that they do, where they're going to say, this is the best movie that we've ever made, you should be including these summer blockbusters. You should be making the summer blockbusters not just to make money, but also to be, wow, that was the best movie I've ever seen.
Those are the oddities. Those don't normally get the attention of the Academy. It's only when it has completely absorbed so much attention that the Academy would be considered foolish to not include it on the list, do they include it on the list. Titanic was a huge blockbuster. It had the CGI. It had the special effects. It had the big-name actor. It was the number one box office draw of that year, and it won the Oscar. That doesn't usually happen. Pirates of the Caribbean being nominated. Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King, actually won. That really was a blockbuster. It was also a wonderful film, great special effects and things of that nature. I'm naming the exceptions to the rule.
It is kind of a shame that that's the case. I guess it's how the industry is run right now. I really don't expect to see Spider-Man 3 win an Academy Award. I don't expect to see Fantastic Four win an Academy Award. Those are pretty silly movies in and of themselves. But you got to hand it to those actors who can get through these roles with a straight face.
You pay somebody enough money and they won't mind being hung upside down by cables against a green screen. And honestly, that's where a lot of the $260 million goes, is to pay really exorbitant salaries.
You know, it doesn't have to be that way. There were only two really known quantities in the Star Wars movie. They brought in Sir Alec Guinness just because they needed a name actor to sell the script. And Harrison Ford, who wasn't actually even up for a role, kind of did it as a favor to George Lucas.
Well, just look at this year's Best Picture nominees. You have Atonement, Juno, Michael Clayton, No Country for Old Men, and There Will Be Blood. I don't recall seeing any of these listed as the number one box office draw.
No, I don't think you'll see any of those as the number one box office draw against something like Transformers. But really, when you face it, Shia LaBeouf is famous. I don't know why he's famous, but he's famous. Again, he was acting against a green screen trying to pretend he was talking to giant robots.
And depending on the way you look at it, that could actually take a lot more acting chops than acting against an actual living, breathing person who you're actually able to get reactions from.
Strangely enough, I agree with that. When you're trying to act against a green screen, that you're facing a giant talking robot who can transform into a car. Yeah, I think that does take a little bit of acting talent, come to think of it. The script itself is really pretty silly. I mean, it's a really simple, good guys wear white hats, bad guys wear black hats script. There was nothing special about it.
I refer back to comments that we made earlier about Michael Bay.
But that's not to say I didn't love it. I mean, I thought it was a great movie. There were some points that were just incredibly, insanely silly. I mean, watching the robots try and hide themselves around the house was just insane. First of all, why didn't they just transform back into cars and park themselves on the street?
I don't want to get into a nitpicking of the various plot flaws of Transformers.
Yes, we can do a whole Twerpcast on that.
The strange thing that I've noticed is that, for me being the person who likes the Oscars and you being the person who dislikes the Oscars, I've been arguing an awful lot about the downside of the Academy Awards, and you've been arguing a lot for the artistic value of them.
But I said that a better barometer, and I stand by this, is the Sundance Festival. That is where you will see actors showing their chops. That's where you're going to see directors showing what is new and what can really be done. And I don't mean new, like what kind of rigs can you build, what's the most expensive shot you can create. I mean a new way of telling a story that really isn't mainstream cinema. I don't like Quentin Tarantino, but what I really do like about Pulp Fiction, a movie that I can't stand, is the fact that it's not told linear. I think it was the first time American audiences really got to see a huge blockbuster movie that didn't start at one point, show 90 minutes, and then it ends. It just kind of flashes back and forward and all the way around, weaving a story together. And I thought, as a storytelling technique, that was extremely innovative.
In spite of the fact that his movies are always so bloody and so violent, I actually appreciate Quentin Tarantino's work for that exact reason. Pulp Fiction knocked my socks off. I could not believe how wonderful of a film this was because of the fact that he was daring in his storytelling choices. Here was a guy who had a fresh vision, who had a fresh outlook, and that year he got beat by Forrest Gump.
That's so ironic, because the main thing that made Forrest Gump a great movie was the absolutely perfect use of CGI. Forrest Gump is a movie that used CGI better than any movie I've ever seen. Transformers, Pirates of the Caribbean, whatever. Because it took a real person, put him in real situations that really could have happened. When you see Gary Sinise, who's the most fabulous actor ever, and you can believe that he really does not have legs in that movie. That's the perfect use of CGI. You don't need to make giant robots. You just take a small little thing and take an actor with two legs and convince the audience and the entire world that he's a disabled veteran.
So are you confused yet, listener? You should be, because we are. As I said before, the Academy is a dichotomy. When you think that they should be drawn to the art of movie making, they go to the blockbuster CGI. When you think that the best movie that was made for that year was the blockbuster CGI, they go to the art film. They can't seem to make up their mind.
That's absolutely true. To bring it back to this year's movies, as you said, we have Atonement, Juno, Michael Clayton, No Country for Old Men, and There Will Be Blood. Looks like two of those movies are Pulp Fiction, No Country for Old Men and There Will Be Blood. One is The English Patient, Atonement.
Michael Clayton is the blockbuster that wasn't a blockbuster because they chose it to be an Oscar film instead. And Juno is the indie flick. Now, I'm going to put out this disclaimer right off the bat. In the past 3 years, with the exception of Pirates of the Caribbean 3, I have not seen a single movie that was nominated for the Academy Awards before the awards took place.
I think that actually makes you the perfect candidate to be an award chooser, because you're not going on the merits of the movie itself, you're going on other things. What actor do you like? What topics do you like? And I think this is really what the Academy is voting on. They're not voting on which picture deserves it. They're voting on who they like, the popularity contest.
And that's the scary part, is that of those 3 years, I've been able to pick 4 out of 6, 5 out of 6 winners for the Academy Awards, strictly based on what you just described. Popularity, what the topic was, things of that nature. And this year, I'll do it again. I haven't seen a single one of these movies yet.
Well, looking at the list that we already described, Atonement, I love Natalie Portman. I would love for her to get the Academy Award. She just absolutely knocks my socks off every time I see her. Juno and Ellen Page, I just think that if you've ever heard her speak, she is just one of the most intelligent 20-year-olds I have ever heard. Ellen Page is going to be a future Marlon Brando or Meryl Streep. She's really going to be somebody to watch for. With Michael Clayton, I may be the last person in America who actually likes George Clooney, but I think he's got acting chops.
I've got nothing against George Clooney.
No Country for Old Men. I'm just as partial to a blow-em-up movie as anybody else. There Will Be Blood. Nice little period piece. If I had to have my druthers, it would come down to Juno or Michael Clayton. And because George Clooney just got his awards last year, and, you know, we can't do that 2 years in a row, of course.
Unless you're Tom Hanks.
Well, there's a few. But in modern times, it's Tom Hanks. I vote for Juno.
Honestly, I would love to see Juno win. Out of all 5 of these movies that were nominated, from what I've seen, I think Juno is the best choice. It best exemplifies what the Academy claims to stand for. That being said, I don't think it's going to win. Down deep inside, it's a quote-unquote comedy. Comedies rarely win. Again, we come back to that whole genre thing. Comedies don't win. Science fiction rarely wins. Fantasy rarely wins. They ignore the good genres.
So, who's your pick?
I do believe that Michael Clayton will probably win for Best Picture, primarily because George Clooney didn't direct it, and this way they get to give George Clooney the win without actually giving him another award.
How about Best Director?
I did an Oscars picks 2 years ago for my blog, and the statement that I made at that point was, the movie that wins Best Picture almost always gets Best Director. And for the most part, it's still true. When you look at the whole 80-year history, the percentage of directors whose movies also won Best Picture is significantly higher than those that didn't. I'm still going to ride with the percentages. I'm going to say it's probably going to be Tony Gilroy with Michael Clayton.
You make me reconsider my movie prediction, because I really, really want Juno to win. But given the popularity of the Coen brothers right now and their lack of Oscar standing, I have a feeling that the Academy is going to see this as the year of the Coens, and they're going to give it to No Country for Old Men, which means I probably should change my Juno prediction to No Country for Old Men and the Best Director to the Coen brothers.
Did you say lack of Oscars or lack of talent?
Yes. Yes, I did.
I have yet to see a Coen brothers film that I enjoyed, so just based on that, I can't vote for them. I haven't seen No Country for Old Men. Don't really plan on seeing No Country for Old Men, because it's a Coen brothers film.
They're hugely popular, and I think in a popularity contest, they've gone a lot of years without the win.
Being popular doesn't always mean you're talented.
They have the bluest set of movie reels I have seen in Hollywood.
Best actor choice.
Wow, this is incredibly hard. The only one that I feel that we can safely eliminate is George Clooney. I really don't think he'll get 2 years in a row.
I agree with you there.
Johnny Depp certainly did not earn it for Sweeney Todd. Again, in a popularity contest, Johnny Depp is winner hands down, but Tim Burton did him a real disservice in Sweeney Todd. He gave him 2 emotions to act, that was anger and depression, and he gave all of the rest of the emotions to Helen Bonham Carter, and she was absolutely marvelous. The fact that she is not down here for Best Actress is a crime.
The fact that you just stated that it is not his best performance, I'm going to refer back to Robin Williams. That's the exact reason why I think he's very high in the running to actually win this one. He's been nominated several times before this point, never received one. He's well respected within the acting community. I think there's only one person that stands a chance of beating him out for the Oscar.
Who's that?
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Right now, when I look at that, that's who I really see, is Daniel Day-Lewis. I love Tommy Lee Jones. I really think that my next choice would be Viggo Mortensen. Again, he's been in some really big movies. He's very popular, very well-liked, and it's one of those things where it may be his year, but I just keep seeing Daniel Day-Lewis. I've been a Johnny Depp fan since 21 Jump Street, so I go way back.
Now, the reason I say that Daniel Day-Lewis is the front runner is strictly because of something that George Clooney said. When interviewed about being nominated, George Clooney made the statement of, "It's been great to be nominated, but the person who deserves it is Daniel Day-Lewis." When George Clooney is saying that about a fellow nominee, you have to take it seriously.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to say Daniel Day-Lewis. Because if Johnny Depp gets it, as much as I like him, it would be just a total sham.
And because of the total sham, that's why I'm going to pick Johnny Depp. And I'm the fan of the Oscars.
Best Actress. Again, this is hard. Cate Blanchett already got hers for the first Elizabeth. If it were strictly a vote, I would like to see Ellen Page win it. As I said, here is somebody at 20 years old. It's just an amazing person, an amazing actress. My absolute top choice for Best Actress. Do I think that she's going to get it? I don't know.
A lot of years, Best Actress is the wild card event. It's where anything can happen. It's where Marissa Tomei won for My Cousin Vinny.
Marissa, if you're listening, I will marry you.
And Charlize Theron won for Monster. You can't have two broader ranges of performances, in my opinion, than that.
Charlize, I will marry you too. As a side note on the Best Actress category, did you see that Cate Blanchett is going to be playing Bob Dylan in a retrospective movie?
She's going to play Bob Dylan.
Yes, she is playing the male lead.
Okay, I will say it right now. She's going to end up getting the Best Actress award for that year.
I'm going to second that prediction.
It doesn't matter if it totally blows and she's horrible in it. She'll still win the award.
I don't know whether it is a credit to her acting ability that they would have her play the male role, or just a really, really bad insult that, wow, you look as bad as Bob Dylan. I don't think that she's an ugly woman. I understand that in the Elizabeth movies, they are downplaying her beauty, but I've seen her in other things. She's not ugly.
With my statement about there being a broad range and the wild card effect in place, I'm actually going to go on ahead and pick Ellen Page. She's a relatively new face. She pulled off, from everything that I've heard, a great performance. And usually when it comes to the Best Actress role, it's either you're brand new or you played a lesbian. She's brand new.
All right, then I'm going to go with Ellen Page.
I sold you, huh?
You sold me. Ellen, if I were 20 years younger, I'd marry you.
Are you going to tell me that you'd marry Johnny Depp, too, if you got the chance?
I would be Johnny Depp's boy toy any day.
Next up is Best Supporting Actor.
I can barely say Javier Bardem, but he's in No Country for Old Men, therefore he will win.
Okay. Strangely enough, I understand that logic. In this case, I'm actually going to go through who I don't think is going to win to get down to who I think will win. Casey Affleck is not his brother, which may actually prove that he will have talent. It's hard to say, but I don't think he's going to win Best Supporting Actor for The Assassin of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. Philip Seymour Hoffman.
I'd love to see him get it. I wouldn't say that I'm a huge fan, but I love his work.
Philip Seymour Hoffman just won Best Actor last year, so I don't think he's going to get it, strictly because of that whole 2 years in a row thing. They reserve that for Tom Hanks. Hal Holbrook stands a chance just because he's been in the industry for so long and really hasn't been recognized. But Tom Wilkinson is in Michael Clayton, which I've picked as Best Picture and Best Director, and a lot of times they like to group them all together. So I'm kind of torn between the two of them. They both have good Academy reasons to win. You notice I said nothing about their acting talent or their performances. That being said, I think I'm going to go with Hal Holbrook just because of the age factor.
Best Supporting Actress.
Once again, we have Cate Blanchett nominated.
I love Cate Blanchett. I don't think she's going to get Best Actress for a sequel to a movie she got the Oscar for. Best Supporting Actress, I could see them giving her.
If she was up against anybody but...
Ruby Dee. Ruby Dee, again, is one of those people who has been around forever, has not been properly recognized for her performance. Honestly, I think she's a shoo-in for this. I think the Academy is going to say, this is her year.
I will completely agree with that. Which brings us down to our last category. There are literally dozens more categories out there. But the last one that we have on our list is actually also the newest award presented by the Academy, and that's Best Animated Film. Now, I remember back when Beauty and the Beast was running for Best Picture and didn't win, which broke my little child heart.
Beauty and the Beast is actually one of the best Disney films ever. I think it is equal to Disney's first full-length feature, Snow White. That being said, I mean, Beauty and the Beast, which is an absolutely marvelous Disney film. Beauty and the Beast is the best modern times movie that really evokes Walt Disney's dream of the Magic Kingdom, of the magic movie, and of being a kid at heart.
There has not been a Disney film since that evokes the same level of emotion, the same overall feel of this is a great film as Beauty and the Beast. There have been ones that have brought in a higher box office. There have been ones that have gotten higher critical acclaim. But in my opinion, there are no better Disney films.
And as much as I love the Pixar films, I like to separate them because Pixar films are really a completely different creative staff. And I love Toy Story, and I think it really did have a lot of those values of being a story that appeals to kids and a story that appeals to adults and just will last for generations of fun. But it's not the classic Disney movie, and Beauty and the Beast is.
As we said, it did not win Best Picture, even though it should have. It took the creation of the movie Shrek for the Academy to finally realize there are enough animated films being produced that we should create a special category specifically for them. I say that it's thanks to Shrek because Shrek was the first one to win that Oscar. And let's be honest, the position was made for that movie. They wanted to give Shrek an Oscar. They couldn't find any other way to do it. They created a special category just for that movie.
What a crime. Shrek was okay. It was a funny little movie, but it is not smart. It's overrated.
It's no Beauty and the Beast.
It's no Simpsons. Shrek was funny. It was well animated, well directed, well written. Award worthy? I don't know about an ogre farting in a mud bath. I mean, that's lowbrow humor.
It's blockbuster material. This year, there are three movies that have been nominated for Best Animated Film. It's Persepolis, Ratatouille, and Surf's Up. Again, as far as I can tell, none of these movies are Beauty and the Beast material. Yes, I do set a high standard.
I don't even know what to say about these. Persepolis is based on a graphic novel by the same name. Ratatouille is a rather cute Pixar movie. Surf's Up is a penguin movie.
Surf's Up is a penguin movie with a penguin who is tired of the cold and he goes to Hawaii so he can learn how to surf. With the exception of Shrek, there has been a rule of thumb when it comes to Best Animated Film. When in doubt, give it to Disney. Pixar is still part of the Disney stable, therefore I think Ratatouille will win it.
Stable is a really good word for Disney animation because most of it's horse manure. But for the same exact reason, I'm going to go with Ratatouille.
So there you go. Those are our Oscar picks for the 80th Annual Academy Awards. On February 24th on ABC, you can tune in and see how close we've come.
All right. For the very first time, TorpCast announced our Oscar Challenge. Send your prediction of the same categories to jim@torponline.net. Any entry who is at least as accurate or more accurate than our predictions will be entered in a random drawing to win a CD audio copy of Star Trek Era's Episode 1, The Big Bang. Winners will be notified by email. At that time, we will ask for a mailing address. Please enter only once. Multiple entries will not increase your chances of winning. Entry deadlines are February 24th at 2 p.m. Central Time.
Speaking of Star Trek eras and other TWRP productions, Act 2 of Yours, Minds, and Ours is finally out! Yay!
However, that also brings us to a little bit of bad news.
Act 3 is currently in a holding pattern. Here's the situation. Joan Halloran, who plays Violetta Noor on Star Trek Eras, wife of Jerry Halloran and mother of Beth, Ken, and Matt Halloran. Matt Halloran is our sound editor. Obviously, Matt has had other things on his mind than editing Act 3. This is completely understandable, and we completely support the entire Halloran family in concentrating solely on Joan's recovery. As such, we're not sure when Act 3 will be out. We do know it will be out, but be patient with us. Family comes first. We hope that you'll join us in extending your thoughts and your prayers to Joan and the entire family during this time. We'll keep you updated with the situation. Now for some good news. As we've stated, we are in the process of creating a new show called Derek Geist. We have completed the casting for this show. The role of Derek Geist has gone to Ryan Gilbert. The role of Ajit has gone to our very own Doug Zeitlin. And the role of Lindsay has gone to April Sadowski. In supporting roles, we've also cast Oscar Hopeful as Jeremy, Lee Sands as Walter, and David McIver in the role of Heinrich. Ryan, Lee, and David are all brand new TWRPs, and we are very glad to have them aboard. Recording is underway, and we'll keep you apprised on our progress. In the way of recaps from previous TWRP casts, we wanted to give a shout-out to our good friend Kirok from Trek United. He's been a strong supporter of TWRPs from the very beginning, and he was nice enough to actually quote us in response to a producer of a new Star Trek video production. He said, and I quote, "The guys on the TWRPcast podcast, when they did their TrekCast for the 12 Days of Christmas, had it spot on when they pointed out that, although one of the major selling points of Star Trek was the philosophy of IDIC and accepting diversity of opinion, Trek fans can be very closed-minded about what is and what is not Star Trek." It feels so good to be quoted. So it's hats off to Kirok. Thank you very much for listening. We always appreciate your feedback and your help in further promoting all of our shows.
And since our WGA cast, there has been updates in the writer's strike.
The writers won.
Yeah! Well, that being said, there really was a compromise. They gave up on a couple of their issues, and they received a couple of their issues. So it's truly a compromise.
Yes, yes. They received an increase both in production and in redistribution rights. In other words, they got a raise on the DVDs, and they managed to get an agreement for the new media, which really was the sticking point. That was the thing that they had to get in order to keep from getting cheated. I won't go into great detail as to the numbers. You can look that up just as easily as we can. How exactly they came to the dollar amounts that they came to, I have no idea, but at least they're getting paid for it, which is a fantastic thing. They didn't get the contracts for the animated or reality series, but that's to be expected because the animated writers are under a different union. So that's not so much of a loss as much as it is a draw. In the end, they got what they needed.
And they are back to work.
Several of the shows won't be back until the fall, but at least they're coming back.
Thank you again for listening to TWRPcast. As always, we encourage feedback. Please write Jim at twrponline.net.
TWRPcast has been a production of Timewell Electronic Recording Productions, copyright 2008.